I was a little nervous because I thought, well, I feel like I'm going to be a sort of a letdown as a bad guy because you've had such amazing bad guys on this show. But the more I thought about it, I was like, well, Lance, in some ways, is the scariest of all because he's the kind of guy you actually run into in real life on a more regular basis than, say, like, you know, a Negan or a, or the, you know, Whisperers. You know, he's just your, he's, you know, an ambitious, fairly duplicitous guy who just says what he will, you know, say, well, almost anything to get what he wants.
Hey Zedheads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And this is The Walking Dead Cast episode 468.
And in this episode, we are talking to my future husband, Josh Hamilton.
Hi, Josh. I bet he's listening to this.
He's listening. Josh.
One thing I wanted to say, he was so nice. Such a great conversation.
So
lovely.
Nice.
And I just did not feel like there was a moment to introduce the hashtag horny for horny. So just to set it so you guys know.
Well, I wasn't going to do it, so fine by me. What you can't see is I'm wearing a baseball cap with that written on it, so it was pretty implicit.
It was great to talk to Josh, and you'll hear that in just a second. But also, afterwards, I want to let you know we have an announcement about our Fear the Walking Dead cover, so stay tuned for that. And without any further ado, here's Josh Hamilton. Okay, we're here with Josh Hamilton. Josh, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with us.
My pleasure.
We're so glad to have you here. We've been podcasting about The Walking Dead episode by episode since the show started 12 years ago.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, can I just tell you actually that, you know, when I first got this job, I embarrassingly had never seen a single, I had never seen an episode. And I was like, I'll watch the most recent ones. I mean, I watched like two or three of the, like, I guess it was 10B or C or wherever they were, you know. And I thought, okay, wow, this is really good, but I just got to figure out who everyone is. And so I looked up, you know, the best podcasts on The Walking Dead, and yours is first. And so I listened to a handful of episodes. And first of all, I just like loved the podcast. I thought I thought you were really funny and smart about the way you analyzed it. But it also really helped me understand the world of the show and how people were taking it in and processing it and like sort of what it meant to people. And then I did end up going back and watching the entire 10 years that I didn't plan on that. I didn't think I was going to have the time. But then I got down there and for the COVID reasons, I had a lot of time in my apartment. And so I was like, well, I guess I'll start with the first episode and then, you know, see how it started. And then I couldn't stop, of course. So,
well, I mean, that's all the time we have for our interview. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. No, but I just want to say that I really appreciate your podcast really helped me sort of get into like, you know, how it was. I just really enjoyed it. So when I got the email about doing it, I was like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Thank you, Josh. Yeah. That is
thanks,
so
Josh.
Great to hear. Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm blushing. That's amazing. So I want to tell you, you know, so you know we're really familiar with all the ins and outs of the show.
Yeah.
And we've just loved everything with the Commonwealth, how it's brought something new and fresh to the world of The Walking Dead. And your character in particular is so central to all that. And we think you've just been knocking it out of the park. We just want to tell you.
Oh,
right,
thank
off
you.
The bat.
Appreciate it. So, wow. That's wow. So we all look at this mutual appreciation society.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not, I'm not kidding. I mean, we don't try to get interviews with everybody. The ones that we're most, you know, into and engaged with.
I'm honored.
So we have a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
The character of Lance has really expanded and gotten more complex from how he is in the comics. And we wondered if you knew the full extent of where his character was going when you came in.
No, I knew almost nothing. You know, I got the couple of auditions. They're obviously super secret. You know, I got a couple of audition scenes and I put them on tape. And then I got a call a couple of weeks later saying they wanted to do it. And, when I had my first phone call with Angela Kang, I didn't even know who the character, they had put a fake name on the on the side. So I didn't even know my character's name was. I didn't even know I was playing Lance Hornsby.
What was it? What did you?
I don't remember. It was some random name they came up with.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. They do that all the time. Yeah. They don't want to give away the
secrets. Of course. Yeah. And I hadn't read the comic. And I asked her, I said, should I read the comic? And she said, well, I mean, you certainly can. But, you know, he's very different from how he's portrayed in the comic. And so I opted not to, just because I didn't want to get any ideas in my head that like were different from how they were writing him, and sort of feel like, oh, but I'm not being authentic to the original comic vision. But yeah,
I mean, he starts out pretty similar, wouldn't you say, Lucy?
Like, I was gonna say, yeah, we went back and reread the comics recently, and we were surprised, I think, by the very similar start, but then he's very nothingy in the like nothing much happens with him. He just kind of is what you first expect, and I think what you've brought out and what the script has brought out is this very multi-layered, almost villainous performance. And do you think they expanded it because of what you were bringing to the character, or did you have much input into how he was going to be, or did they bring him to you as like fully fledged, this is who we see him as?
You know, I don't really know what goes on in the writer's room. I don't think, I certainly didn't have much input. I mean, no one was saying like, so what do you think Lance should do?
Yeah.
Because we have no idea.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I might have appreciated some suggestions. But I do think that as it goes on, I would imagine that writers are either inspired or, you know, influenced by maybe certain aspects, or they start writing to what they see as, you know, what you're bringing to it, or what they, but I think they had the general scope of the story mapped out. So the only thing they really said was that he, you know, he is a villain, but not, you know, a mustache twirling villain. He's, you know, he's you don't want to necessarily know that he's a villain right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's more like a villain in the real world that we have.
Well, that's exactly what I thought, is that, you know, especially compared to the Walking Dead villains who are, you know, so extreme from, you know, being just, you know, human abattoirs or sociopath, you know. And I thought, wow, I was a little nervous, because I thought, well, I feel like I'm going to be a sort of a letdown as a bad guy, because we've had such amazing bad guys on this show. But the more I thought about it, I was like, well, Lance, in some ways, is the scariest of all, because he's the kind of guy you actually run into in real life on a more regular basis than, say, like, you know, a Negan or the Whisperers. You know, he's just he's an ambitious, fairly duplicitous guy who just says what he will, you know, say, well, almost anything to get what he wants, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But who thinks he's right? You know, he believes, he doesn't think, you know, because obviously bad guys never think they're bad guys.
I mean, I think it makes sense that he's the kind of villain that we would meet in the real world. Well, let me tell you, my thing about The Walking Dead lately is I feel like there's a symmetry going on, because it started with the fall of civilization, and now it's ending with the possibility of bringing it back, and whether our characters even want that. So now that we have all the trappings of civilization that have been missing from the show this whole time, we also get a villain that's more like what we see in our real world.
Exactly. Now. Yeah. Yeah.
But what do you think about that symmetry thing? Do you think there's anything to that?
I do. I mean, I think exactly what you said is, do they want to go back to that? You know, was society so great with that, you know, with the class system and the inequality and, you know, it's, you know, yeah, make the Commonwealth great again. Or, you know, I don't know.
What do you think you would want? If you were in the zombie apocalypse,
what I would want is I think what some of the communities that they've been doing, like, you know, sort of, I would try to have smaller, you know, more, a little more egalitarian, you know, a little more, I mean, if we want to use the word socialist, or, you know, I don't want to upset anyone, but, that would be my personal, I'm not gonna make a lot of that.
More like Alexandria, right?
Yeah, exactly. More like Alexandria, you know? And, you know, people can point out where, like, well, Maggie lives in the nicest house, because, but there, you know, there is only one house, and there is, but I feel like at least they're trying to create a society that's more equal and not so, dog eat dog or person eat person. Yeah.
Do you feel that Lance believes in the Commonwealth, or is it more about power for him?
I think Lance does believe in the Commonwealth. I think he's sincere in his belief. In the same way that, you know, people who are in the sort of a colonial mindset, or, you know, they believe that their ideas are right and they should spread them to the rest of the world. And, you know, so whenever a powerful empire is, you know, they truly believe that they are, you know, spreading their technology or their accomplishments to, you know, other parts mm-hmm. of the world that, you know, that could use it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they go in thinking like, ha ha ha, we're going to, you know, destroy these people's wills and, you know, and make mm-hmm. their lives worse. And they all think they're going to make these people's lives better. And I think Lance does believe that. And you know, that if the communities are connected and there's strength in numbers and, you know, fair, more, you know, more trade between all of these places. And I do think he believes in that. And I mean, whether he believes in the class system per se, I mean, I think so. I don't think he's not a socialist revolutionary. You know, he definitely wants to succeed within that system. But I think he did come from a working class. I mean, none of this is, I don't think, in the comic or in, you know, in the scripts really, but something Angela and I talked a lot about was that he was lower class. He was working class mm-hmm. as a child, and maybe his father had worked for President Milton. Mm. And so I sort of grew up, you know, we talked about maybe he was the chauffeur for the Miltons or something. So I was very in close mm. proximity to this powerful, rich family, but was very much in my place, and that I was probably, you know, sort of peering over through the gate into, you know, Pamela as a, you know, she's probably a few years older than me. And I just, you know, had this sort of, this princess in the tower, you know, kind of thing from a young age. And it's like, but it's not like I didn't want to tear it down. I wanted to join that, you know, I wanted to succeed in that world.
The coin sort of hints at that, the gold plated coin. Yeah. But that's great to get a little more clarity on the backstory. Everything you're saying sounds, makes so much sense. And yet I also feel like Lance at times lets the thirst for power cloud his vision for everything else. Do you think there's something to that too, or not really?
I think there's absolutely something like that, which of course is what, you know, what happens with people in power, you know, no matter how good their intentions are, either at the beginning or all the way through, you know, power corrupts. And so I think the closer he gets to it, the more he wants it, the more it slips through his fingers, the more desperate he gets, the more, you know, violent he gets, or, you know, the more the extremes that he's willing to go to, I think, get more and more extreme. Because he certainly is power. I don't think he wants to topple Pamela, but I do think he wants to have his own piece of the pie, you know, mm-hmm. by running these other communities. Yeah,
I just recently heard this thing about, I think it was Alexander the Great was presented with this Gordian knot, and his method for figuring it out was to chop it in half with a sword. And it feels like maybe Lance has gotten to that point. Yeah. Like he made a pretty sharp left turn at the end here.
Yeah, yeah, he's getting desperate. I mean, I think things are getting more out of control, because even though he's very good at his job, for a long time he's been in a fairly small controlled environment. You know, I think he knows how the Commonwealth works, and he has these little things going on outside, but he hasn't been put to the test in terms of people actually really resisting him, or, you know, his ambitions are getting larger and people are, it's not going the way he is wanting. And so I think he's losing his grip a little bit and getting more and more desperate. And that was sort of the fun thing about getting to unravel this tightly, you know, tightly dapper guy. Yeah.
You get the impression that it's a fun dynamic to play when you see those scenes with Lauren mm-hmm. Cohan as Maggie and yeah. Lance starting to unravel himself a little bit. That seems like that must be quite a lot of fun to play as an actor, those two extremes.
Yeah, it was. And also, because, I mean, I was thinking, I think there's a part of Lance, I mean, this is all just my, you know, in my mind, things I make up mm-hmm. to make it more interesting to play. But I think there was a part of him when he first met Maggie, was like, wow, you know, I mean, what if it was the two of us? You know, maybe what if we were like the you know, the first couple of this new community? You know, but I think
I've had those thoughts about her,
right? Too. Yeah, right, you know, let's be honest. Yeah, but you know, I think he also was enamored of, you know, with Carol. I mean, I think he's the kind of guy who, like, who if he's with someone, he's like, oh, you're the, like, you know, he's really connected with who he's with, and sort of thinks like, well, it could be us. I mean, even
he's a dreamer, right?
He's a dreamer, yeah. And I think he can get caught up in his own fantasies, you know. So I think he's especially hurt when Maggie foils his dream plan for these communities mm-hmm. coming together, not just because it's what he wants, but I do think there was a part of him was like, wow, you know, this could be, I could be a stepdad to Herschel.
You know? Wow. Like, you know, so like, it was a rejection. It was almost like a personal rejection.
I think so. I mean, that's how I was thinking about it in my head. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's always supported by the scripts or, you know, you always have your own thing going on in your head. Yeah.
I liked that Lance didn't underestimate Carol the first time he met her. Throughout the story, we see Carol be underestimated, mm-hmm. particularly by the men around her. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really interesting move to have him see her for the potential that she has. Was it fun to work with Melissa McBride? She's been a real favorite of ours on the show for a long time.
I mean, she's everyone, right? She's
brilliant.
Brilliant. She is brilliant. She's the kind of actor that makes you just want to, because you know there's so little acting going on. You know, if you do too much like acting, it'll just stand out like, I'm Schmack David. So
yeah,
you want to just, you know, be present with her. And she is. She's just so present and real and sensitive. And so, yeah, I was intimidated to work with her. It's funny, when the first time I met her, I came up on set and we'd gotten ready and got all in hair and makeup and we'd sat around for a couple hours and they'd gotten behind that day. And I walked up to set to see what was going on. And on the way, I ran into one of the ADs and they said, hey, by the way, I'm so sorry. The scene's been pushed. We just can't get to it today. And I go on set and I see Carol talking to a crew member. I mean, Melissa talking to a crew member. And I went up and I said, hi, you know, I want to introduce myself. I'm Josh. Did you hear that our scene isn't getting done? And she went, what? And she threw this, we're being pushed. And I was like, oh my God, is she like a crazy diva? She like threw this. Like, and then she just started laughing. And I thought, she was just, you know, taking the piss. And
amazing.
I thought, I couldn't love you more. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. <That's amazing.
laughs> My experience with her is when I played a zombie on The Walking Dead in season 2. Uh-huh. I saw a woman come out of a building and I said, do you know where the bathroom is? And she said, right over there. It was magical.
Yeah.
No, but we so love her and how she plays this role. She's freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. Makes me wonder, when she confronts you about what Sebastian's been mm-hmm. having people go through, these hordes of zombies to get cash for him, and you talk about roles that people need to play and everything, and then she says, yeah, people can either be part of the problem or part of the solution. Do you think there's any part of Lance that realizes she's saying he's part of the problem, you know, or that might be concerned that she's not fully on board, or does he buy it?
I think any courtier, anyone in a court, is always terrified of, you know, losing their place and sort of knowing how to either flatter or please, or, you know, she's the queen, you know, she's the leader. And so I think he's very aware of always trying to please her. And I also think it even is more deep rooted than just being, you know, like wanting to keep his job and his place. I do think it goes back to his childhood of like wanting to, having this deep seated need to like sort of please, you know, get like, I think there's a part of him that's like all for her, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't even know if he's conscious of it, but I think it's somewhere in him.
But yeah, I mean, I'm saying my guess is that she does not approve.
No, I don't think so.
And do you think that he suspects
that? Yeah, I think he knows he's very on very thin ice with her. You know, I mean, okay. I can't remember what episode it is, but it's when she, yeah, after when Maggie says, you know, no deal. And I'm like, I go into her tent and she goes, you know, she gives me just an inch. She says like, okay, you can like, you know, you can take this a little further, but if it gets too messy, we're out or something. I can't remember the exact words that she says, but she gives him just the slightest bit of room to sort of pursue this plan of his. It's right before I go out and shooting the guns, and Aaron comes and I say, we're about to change the world, you know, we're about to remake the world. And it's like, I mean, she barely gives him a nod to sort of like pursue this little fantasy of his just a little bit. And he takes it and runs. And so I think, you know, I think he knows that she is not on board. And I think he's going a little rogue here. Yeah.
Now at the end, we see this chilling scene of all the Commonwealth flags. Have you seen
it? I do not. I'm like one of those neurotic actors. I can't watch myself in general. Uh-huh.
Andrew Lincoln doesn't watch either.
Oh, really?
I don't know if you know that. Yeah.
I
never watches.
You know, maybe someone told me that at one point, because I'm always glad when I hear it, because part of me always feels like, oh, I should watch and learn and to get over like the whatever it is. And then sometimes I hear about actors who can, it makes me feel better because, yeah, I just can't. I did see someone 16 because I had to talk about it for on the Talking Dead. So I had to watch a little bit of that. So I did. I know what you're talking about when the it unfurled.
Okay. Yeah. And I feel like there was a bit of a jump there. We didn't get to see how that takeover happened, but I was wondering if Pamela would have had to approve that.
That's a really good question. In theory,
maybe you can't say, I don't know. Yeah.
No, I don't think it's, I'm not hiding anything. I don't think it's explained. I think it is a leap. But I do, I mean, how I justified it to myself was just that, you know, Lance has a large, if not the entire stormtrooper, you know, container, the soldiers, he does have a lot of people in his pocket. And I think there's a lot of, you know, sort of, I don't think Pamela knows so much of what's going on to the, you know, in the minutiae of the day-to-day running. I think, you know, Lance thinks that he's the one who, you know, I think that's a pretty common thing for anyone who works under like a leader. Like they're all thinking like, you know, we're the one who knows how the sausage is made. They're sort of just like, you know, kind of waving and smiling.
And there could be some truth.
I think there's a lot of that with Lance. I think it's like there's a lot of things that go on in the day-to-day machinations of the Commonwealth that he knows about and she might not. So that's how I justified that he was getting these things in and out and, you know, yeah.
Well, he clearly knew where to get the signs printed and stuff and took them with him. So that's a high level of organization.
Yes, he knows where all the codes are in the area. Yeah.
He knows his suppliers.
Yeah. And also, just to go back to what you said about how what he thinks about how he doesn't underestimate Carol. I just realized I didn't really answer that. But I do think that he, you know, Lance is someone that the second he meets them, he thinks, okay, how can this person be of use to me, right? Mm. He's a fixer in that society. So everything's about like, you know, I do this for you, you do that for me. And so I think he's very attuned to what he senses are people's talents and strengths. And I think he clocks that in Carol right off. And, you know, he does. He likes to think of himself who's always thinking four or five steps ahead. And he's like, I think you're like that, too.
Mm-hmm. Like which absolutely is sort of playing with fire, but it's also could be very useful.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. He does trust her maybe more than he should. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Right. We have some listener questions, and I want to make sure we have some time for that. But before we get into that, I also want to mention a couple of things that you did that I was also a fan of. You played Roberto Canessa in the great 1993 movie Alive.
Yeah,
that was a very formative / terrifying
right.
film for me.
I know.
A Uruguayan rugby team who's playing Crash in the Andes and their struggle to survive. So intense. And I was wondering if you remember what the mood was like filming that. Were you all somber or did you have some fun with it, even though it was that subject matter? You know,
that's such a good question. And I remember when we were getting ready to shoot it, a lot of the actual guys came meet us. You know, and we had this, you know, big dinner and we were all really nervous because we were like, oh, is this, you know, obviously this is a very formative experience in their lives. And we thought like, we were all prepared to be very, you know, respectful. And we sat down to dinner and the first thing I feel something on my elbow and I look and one of the guys has his knife and fork and he's carving into my arm. And then, you know, I was like, oh, then they all laughed. And I realized, you know, these guys that, you know, they were sort of rock stars in a way. They'd all, by this point, they'd all been like around the world. And there's so many people who were so fascinated by that story. And they'd kind of, they had, I think, been to so many events and parties, or they just, it's obviously something that was deeply painful and hard for them. But at this point, at the time we met them, they were very, you know, light about it and knew how to talk about it and joke about it. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I don't know if you know, there's this new show on a Showtime called Yellow Jackets. Have you heard of this?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
It's so good.
I've heard. I love that. I recommend the cast, yeah.
And then the other one is more recent, Eighth Grade, Bo Burnham's movie about childhood and everything. Mm-hmm. And, I love that movie and you were so good.
Thank you.
You wanted to make, I almost cried when you were really, you know, taking
almost.
Care of
not, 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 you didn't cry, but you almost cried.
I may have.
Maybe a little misty. Yeah.
Yeah, just a little.
A single tear.
But what stands out for you about making that movie?
Well, just first of all, how you know, I mean, the script and Bo Burnham's direction, because that's always, you know, that's what it always comes down to. When you when people respond to something, you think like, oh, I did a great job. You're like, it's almost always the part and the you know, he just really, someone who really knew what he wanted. And
that's his first movie, right?
That was his first movie he directed. Yep. And so I knew it was a great script, but I didn't know how great it was going to turn out. I mean, I knew you know, he really wanted, as soon as, again, it's sort of the same thing with Melissa, where I first met Elsie Fisher and sort of saw what Bo was asking her to do, which was just be, you know, like no acting, just to be really, you know, vulnerable and real. And it was another one of those things where I was like, if I do any acting here, I'm going to look like a kabuki person next to her. And so I was just like, and Bo's, his major direction to me was just like, just love her, love her, love her, love her, like shower her with love. And I remember asking him, I said, is this based on your father? He goes, oh God, no, it's based on my mother. Like, it's my mother, you know, to kind of switch all the genders, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get into some listener questions. Megan Dively Lehman says, how did Josh prepare his amazing impression of Lance doing Pamela Milton? It must be so hard to stay in one character while doing that person's impression of another fictional character. He nailed it. Okay. Do you know what I'm talking about? I guess there was a scene where, do you remember Lucy? Where he's mocking her a little bit.
Yes, talking to Aaron maybe?
Yeah, it's just like a line or two or something I say. Right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when an actor who makes such clear, strong choices as Lila Robbins, it's sort of easy. It's like she was, I just love what she's so sort of perfectly kind of regal, but also, you know, she's like, she seems like so many politicians that, you know, where you're like, you're like, she's the act of warmth and, but you know, it's so good. It's good enough that you believe it, but you also feel like she might forget your name, you know?
Yes. She turned around and that, she's very good.
Yeah. And also, you know, she's an actress that I've been seeing in New York, you know, on stage for years, and I've always admired her. So, and I knew her a little bit coming, you know, before we did this. So it was really great to get to work with her and spend more time with her. So it's not something I really thought about a lot. I think it just sort of came out. So I'm glad it worked.
Tammy Barr is asking a question that I've been wondering, which is, how does Lance Hornsby remain so fashionable in the Commonwealth? Like, does he have tailors? Is it off the peg? Like, those waistcoats are a statement.
There is a tailor in the Commonwealth.
There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, I think something Angela and I talked about is that he's someone who dresses for the, I think he's always dressed like that. I think someone who's always dressed for the job he wants more than the job he has, you know, he's
absolutely.
It's like dress for success, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's success, and then there's a bright pink suit. I mean, it's working. Yeah, but
you know, I think he wants people to remember him, you know, to sort of stand.
Oh, absolutely.
Out. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's funny. I am not. No one has ever accused me of being a fastidious dresser in my real life. So it was fun.
Oh.
it was fun to get to do that.
To do that.
Then kind of related, Karen Shee says, the grit and grime of the show is one of its hallmarks. And are there times Josh wishes he could dress down, especially in punishing George in Heat? Or does he think his double-breasted coat, vest, and tie are essentials to Lance's duplicity?
Oh, no. I would have loved to have dressed down. I mean, it's because that's much closer to my natural attire would be, you know, what you've seen on the show for the last 10 years. Yeah, no, I always feel like an imposter in a suit, and especially in the Heat. That was intense. Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny because there's now millions of people who just think that's what you are.
Well, if they ever run into me on the street, they will be sadly disabused of that, or happily disabused of that. Yeah.
Ryan Holovich, I like this question a lot. I've just read it here. If Lance could have a storyline with any former Walking Dead character, who would it be?
Ooh, that's such a good question.
Isn't it?
It's really hard to choose. I mean, so many. That's the acting on this. There's been so many actors that I've just been so in awe of. I mean, you know, I would have loved to have gotten the chance to work with Danai.
Oh, yeah.
Sonequa Martin-Green. Am I saying her name right?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I would have, obviously, Scott Wilson, I would have loved just to have worked with him because he's such a...
He shot me in the forehead.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. I mean, really, I have to be honest, there's very few people I wouldn't have wanted to interact with. I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, that's just me personally. I'm trying to think what who Lance would have liked to.
I mean, I'd have loved to see Lance with Rick because Rick was still around in the comics at this time.
And yes.
It would have been interesting to
see. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, people don't last long around Rick, so
that's true.
Yeah, watching, like, so you, this must have been an intense experience to binge through the whole show. Was there a favorite period for you?
Well, to be honest, when you binge it like that, it's all like a dream. It's like a fever dream. You know, it all just kind of blends together a little bit. I just thought of one other character. I think he probably would have admired, and I can't remember her name, but the very tall woman who lived in the garbage in the
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Jadis.
Yeah, I think he would have admired her fashion sense. Yeah.
Yes.
That would have been a fun pairing.
A favorite. You know, no, I don't have a strong sense, because also I wasn't watching it thinking like, oh, this is where, you know, this showrunner left and this one took over. I don't know, like, in terms of eras, like, people who really know the show are very obviously have strong feelings about who was sort of writing and doing things when. And to be honest, I mean, I know people sort of like, oh, like, you know, this season was like, the way the narrative was so propulsive for the first couple of seasons, as obviously was just, you know, that kind of just flew by. It was like, it was over before you know it. And also there were fewer episodes in those earlier seasons.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But you know, even as it goes on, by that time I was so, invested in the characters, and no matter what was going on, you know, narratively, if there were lulls or strengths, I wasn't really aware of that, because if I'm connected, if I'm into the acting, I can forgive a lot narratively, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Probably
yeah.
more than some people who are, you know, but if I like the acting, I can forgive a lot, story-wise. Yeah.
There's a lot of good acting for sure. Yeah. Okay. I got two more things. I just wanted to read this so you'll know what people think. Alma Contreras says, how is he liking being considered one of the best Walking Dead villains? And Claire Redder said, I loved how long it took us to finally realize Lance is a villain. How does it feel to be on a long list of Walking Dead villains with the likes of cannibals and cult leaders?
we talked about that a little bit, about that. I was sort of worried that I wasn't going to be an interesting enough, you know, villain. So that means so much to me that people think that. And also I have to say, I've never, it's just so nice to hear that. And I've never, I've never been on any social media, about 2 months ago. Mm. And I was like, well, people were like, oh, this would be a good time to do it. And I just didn't know how to deal with it. And I figured I was like old enough to sort of,
the whole thing.
I didn't have to, you know, but so I finally joined Instagram a couple months ago, and I've never had any, like, I've never gotten any much feedback, you know, from, as my first experience of having like any feedback. And it's so nice when people say nice things. I'm like, I feel like Sally Field for, you know, her Oscar thing. I'm like, you like me? Really? You like me? You like me?
I mean,
I know it can turn on a dime, you know? And so I'm not going to get, I don't want to get to.
If you're Michael Nicholas or Mika and Lizzie, the two little girls, they got a lot of bad.
People, and even some of the actors on Walking Dead told me that's like they had to stop because, you know, people so seriously and are so affected.
If you get a chance to do a convention, I would recommend at least doing one, because you'll get some
really
great
feedback. Looking forward to that. Yeah.
Cool. And then the last thing, because the show's coming up to the end here, how does it feel for you to be just sort of bringing this thing home, you know, at the end? Is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what to say about all that. You mean like, how does it feel just to be part of, like, as it wrapped up? I mean,
yeah, I guess
it was interesting because obviously there, you know, it was the longest I'd ever worked on one show, like, sort of consistently. I mean, I guess I'd worked on shows longer, but had sort of this more recurring roles where I'd kind of pop in and out. Mm-hmm. And so this is the longest I'd gotten to kind of work with people. And I felt it was hard for me I was so sad at the end, and I can't imagine how weird it was for people who've been on it for years and years.
Readers,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was nice because actually about a week after the show wrapped, I was just walking down the street in New York going to pick up my daughter from a class, and I ran into Norman on the street going to pick up his daughter. And we were just like, hey, man. It was so great. It's like, oh, because sometimes...
It's like you're right out of high school.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, you know, you finish things and you get really close to people and you don't see them for years. And so it was really nice. I made friends in this that I really... I mean, I'll tell you one thing that was... I was sort of bummed about was that I went down there and there's all these people that I really liked. I was like, oh, I can't wait to hang out with people and get to know them really well. But because of like COVID, it was not a big social season, you know. They were so discouraging of anyone like going out and doing anything. And we were all so scared because no one wanted to be the one to shut down this, you know, behemoth of the production. And also most people, it's like they've been on it for 10 years. They're not like, hey, what's everyone doing tonight? You know?
Yeah.
But towards the end, I think things started to loosen up a little bit. And so I got to hang out with people. And I just, there's so many great people on that show. So I was sad it ended, but I hope to, stay friends with a lot of these people. Yeah.
And then we have a tradition. We've been lax, but Lucy reminded me before we started that we ask all of our interviewees to do a zombie sound.
That was really nice, Jason, how you made that my fault. Thank you. That was subtle.
Just telling it like it is.
Yep, just telling the truth.
Bravo.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like you've had some practice. Ooh, dun, dun, dun.
No, that's just me clearing my throat in the morning.
All right, thank you so much, Josh. That was
that it? Oh, that was so fun. Yeah, thanks, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll have it out soon. Well. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. All right, nice to meet you.
Take care.
Nice to see you, Josh. Thanks.
Bye.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Okay, we're back. I mentioned that I would have that was lovely, by the way. It's so much fun.
So nice.
I mentioned I'd have a Fear the Walking Dead related announcement. Some of you guys have been asking about our Fear the Walking Dead coverage. And I know a lot of you guys like to hear us rant about the show, but I feel bad for those who don't. I have gotten some feedback saying that you're not fair. I still like the show, everything. Also, I'm really sick of the show, but we're still going to talk about it anyway. We're going to shift it over to Patreon. So that way, if you're a big fan of Fear the Walking Dead and also our podcast, you won't have to hear us ranting about it. But if you really want to hear about it, you absolutely can. So, and you'll be helping support the podcast and keep everything going at the same time. We're going to do roundtable style coverage, fairly brief, casual. Plan is for either me or Lucy or both of us to be on each one. Although I wouldn't be surprised if it's just me. The first one for last week's episode is already out, and that was season 7, episode 9, and the next one's coming real soon. We're recording Thursday night, so it might be out as you're hearing this too. We played some calls too from listeners Owen and Thomas from AZ, and at this point I think we wouldn't normally be covering it, but we want to honor your requests, so we'll hope if you want to hear it, you'll kick in a couple bucks. It's just as little as $2 a month.
We are nothing if not kind. And Josh Hamilton listens to our podcast, so there's an endorsement.
if you want to get in on that, you can go to patreon.com/JasonCabassi and pledge any amount, $2 or more, and you get to hear us rant about Fear the Walking Dead every week.
What a bargain.
All right, I think I'll do it for now.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much for arranging that. That was awesome.
That was fun.